From late June to early August, we took a 14,000-mile cross-country road trip to get away from the world.
It brought us to 20 national parks, 33 states, 46 cities, and 43 national monuments, forests, memorials, grasslands, and recreation areas.
So in each episode, we'll outline one of our stops, talk about the history of the place, our impressions, and a piece of dark history tea associated with it.
It's gonna be dramatic, scandalous, dare I say captivatingly funny, and hopefully it inspires your next trip in the United States.
This is Road Boys with Jeremy
and Jacob. Welcome to another episode of Road Boys.
Episode 2, Return yes. of the, that's the third Star Wars movie, Revenge of the Sith.
Well, you know, you tried.
I did.
There just was an attempt.
I can't pull out Star Wars references off the top of my head. It's been a little bit for me.
You brought her here
to kill me.
I'm excited about this episode, mostly because I didn't really have to do the work for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's exciting. Stuff is better when it's free. I guess that's the same applies. Same logic applies here.
Yeah, I did all the work. I'm definitely feeling that way. Mm-hmm. So what's up with you?
Well, nothing much. It's been for as quiet as it is being home, it's been a pretty busy week. I've been out working. I mean, I'm kind of employed. I mean, it's my old job, and I'm looking for full-time employment, gainful employment elsewhere. But, you know, it's good to be doing stuff. Yom Kippur was this week, so, you know, as a Jew, I fasted. I proved to myself that I can go without water and food for 24 hours, so I'm glad I proved that to myself.
Did you do the brushing the teeth thing?
Okay, well, that's where I draw the line.
Oh, my goodness, you're not a real Jew.
I guess I'm not. I mean, I have to brush my teeth at night. It's just, you know. But I do have to say, it wasn't the easiest fast. You know, everyone wishes you an easy fast. And this year, if it's any, if it makes up for me brushing the teeth, it wasn't the easiest fast this year. So, but I guess I proved to myself, you know, I can still do it. So.
So what you're saying is that it was the easiest thing you've ever done.
Well, I'm not trying to flex. There was no issues. I'm not trying to flex. And then of course, in the night, you know, you have your breakfast, and that's what you're waiting for the entire day. And you have real lox, and you got bagels and kugel, and the whole culture is out there laid on the table for you. So could not complain, of course. And then after that, I voted, and I just sent in my ballot. So I guess I could say I'm officially a voter in the 2020 election, which is important.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, voting, that's a duty, an obligation.
An obligation. Now, I've had, you know, many of people come to me and say and complain about you to me, saying, you know, Jacob, he doesn't believe in voting. He, you know, he says that there's nothing worth voting for in this election. And I wanted to get into it with you in this podcast and try to change your mind.
So what I'm hearing is homophobic. What I'm hearing is wild fake news, and what I'm hearing from you is complete and utter garbage.
Well, and I want to say, Jacob, you know, there's a lot to be voting for, and if you would just agree with me that you are going to vote this election, I think it'll be a big statement coming from us as influencers now, as online influencers.
Oh, are we influencers?
Oh, you bet we're influencers. I mean, we got someone listening in the Bay Area, so shout out to that person. We're coast to coast.
Coast to coast. Well, here's the thing. I think you're horrible. I think you're bad at this, and I think you should die.
Well, right back at you, and if you could just agree to vote in this election.
Yeah, I'm voting in the election, all right? Jesus Christ. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Now that was end scene. That was a nice argument we had here, and it was hypothetical argument. This was, you know, Jacob was playing the person of someone who wouldn't vote, and of course he votes.
Wait a minute. You thought that was an argument? Here's an argument. So, Jeremy, people on the street and in our fan questions have been saying you have no talent. Would you like to respond?
Well, I would point to my junior year performance in Les Miserables as a reference. I was nominated for a Baltimore Cappy as playing Thénardier, the innkeeper, in Les Mis. And, you know, and my performance, you know, moved people to tears. They brought them laughter, and people still come up to me. This is 2015, and people still come up to me saying, you know, how amazing I was. So if we're going to start pointing the talent, you know, game over here, I got to pull that one back. And
oh, yeah. Well, congratulations on your fake award nomination.
This isn't fake awards. This is the Baltimore Cappies we're talking about. The Cappies, we performed at the CQ Arena in Towson University when all was said and done. So,
wow, just think about huge that. Deal.
Yeah, just think about that. What did you do?
What did I do? I put on a show-stopping performance for my Mr. North Senior Beauty Pageant. I hosted the highest-rated drive-time radio show at Syracuse University, averaging 30,000 listeners a show. But, you know, that's, you know, irrelevant, I guess.
Yeah, you just said it. You know, you took the words out of my mouth, so.
All right, why don't we get into an actual fucking show here?
Okay, all right. We'll do what we signed up to do. That's cool.
Yeah, you know, because this podcast is supposed to be about our road trip and not, you know, these stupid arguments that prove that I am the far superior being.
That's true. That's true. We can't get into arguments, you know, futile arguments like this at the beginning of a podcast. It just will turn people away, I think, because of you. Anyway, so. Well,
all right, go ahead.
So I think we should get into the podcast because I have some good info laid out for you on a couple of the places we went to. I think you're gonna find it interesting. I think people are gonna like it. It's gonna hit well with our listeners. So I guess we should go into the next couple of stops that we visited. How about that?
All right, I'm okay with that, I guess.
Yes. So as I guess you would remember, and anyone who listened to our first premiere episode would remember, we visited Gatlinburg and the Smoky Mountains as our last stop, and we had a great time there. We went through all that. And now we are on our trek westward into the heartland of the nation, and we're going west, and today we'll hit two stops. So first one being Nashville. We drove through Nashville, but we stopped for a good few hours to get a little taste of the city. And it was a good time, I'd say. Would you agree it's a good time?
Yeah, Nashville was fine.
Nashville was fun. And then we
No, it was fine.
Oh, you said it was fine. I think everything we did was fun. And then the same day, we trekked even more westward to our final resting stop of the night, which was St. Louis, Missouri. So the gateway.
Our final resting place, yes.
Our final resting place. We're going to be buried there. I got our plots. So.
No.
And of course, that's the gateway of the West. And then from then on, we really were out there. But this is still, I don't know if you got the vibe from it. It still felt like we hadn't really departed too far from home visiting both of these places. They were American cities. They looked like they were in, could have been East Coast cities, to me at least. But the next stop would be, you know, preview of next week. Eventually we'll get to Denver. That's a whole different game out there, but I don't know. Didn't seem too.
Yeah. Different. I mean, we will get to that, but, I would just want to say when we were driving through Missouri, I like to get to St. Louis, I was really feeling the fantasy of being in Ozark. I was about to tell you that, you know, your father was laundering money for a Mexican drug cartel. And it did feel a little foreign to me, so I'll disagree with you a little bit.
Okay. I mean, I would say the drive to St. Louis, and partially and partially to Nashville. We got there a little bit sooner. It was a little bit out of our comfort zone. We definitely.
Well, yeah, I would say the comfort zone stopped with the 600 Confederate flags that were on the road.
Yeah, I may have made a little bit of an understatement there. There were a lot of Confederate flags. But
why don't you tell us the history?
History of Nashville. So we got to Nashville. It's about midday. And big place. So how did it get that way? So history of Nashville. Just like Gatlinburg and virtually every city we would eventually visit on our road trip, the first inhabitants of the land that would become Nashville, surprise, surprise, they were not white. How about that?
What?
I know. So rather, hundreds of years ago, a hodgepodge or a mishmash, if you will, of Native American tribes such as the Cherokee, Chickasaw, and the Shawnee Nations lived in the region.
Are you saying that America stole that land from Native Americans? That doesn't sound right.
It doesn't sound right. I think we're usually the good guys. If you look at our history, we're the good guys.
We're always the good guys.
And our arrival is always treated with much joy to whoever's inhabiting that land. But I guess not apparently literally every place that we took over might not be the case. Anyway, so 1717. So I guess everyone was having a good time out there doing their own thing until 1717, which is a year of note because this was when a group of French fur traders established a trading post in the area that is Nashville. And in doing so, they gave the region its first name. So the name of this trading post, which I wish stuck around, was the trading post of French Lick. We could have had.
Ooh. Wee. Baguette.
We could have had an American city named French Lick. And I wish it stuck around.
Could you imagine if that was the name of the city and those people still had those accents? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we out here living in French Lick.
French Lick. Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Baguettes. And so, of course, the name's going to change. So how did that happen? So decades later, in the 1770s, the region was then further settled by an American explorer and soldier by the name of James Robertson. And eventually in the 1780s, further settlers on that land built Fort Nashborough. So this is an actual fort on the grounds. And the fort itself was named after Revolutionary War General Francis Nash. So you see where I'm going with this.
Francis Nash.
And in 1784, the settlement was renamed Nashville. So sadly, we do have to wish French Lick an au revoir. Mm-hmm. How you like that?
Oh, I see you trying to incorporate a little French realness in there.
Mm-hmm. Is it the right context? Can you confirm I said that?
Yeah, you said goodbye in French. Congratulations on one of the three words every single American knows of French.
Amazing. I'm very happy for myself. So the 1800s, going a bit further in history, 1800s were Nashville's boom years. It's on a river. So, of course, it became a huge river trade depot. Every city has to have a river.
A dream is like a river. Sorry, Garth Brooks, continue.
And with the expansion of the railroad system in the 1850s, the city's importance on a commercial stage only got bigger and heightened. So it makes sense that in 1843, the city was established as Tennessee's permanent capital.
Okay.
So now, of course, we're getting closer and closer to those interesting years in the 1860s. And interestingly enough, Nashville succumbed to the Union very early on in the Civil War in February of 1862, which I found very interesting.
Well, they were wimps.
They were wimps, and I don't know if you could necessarily tell that the city, after having visited, you know, succumbed to the Union.
Well, what are you going to do in Nashville? Are you going to, when someone shows up with guns, are you going to sit and play your guitar at them? Like, that doesn't work.
I mean, I guess not. So they were busy playing their guitars. The Union came in. They say, hey, can we have this? They're like, yes, just let me keep playing. And that happens. So they were taken by the Union, and actually a lot, from what I read, there weren't many big battles that were fought in Nashville around that area, so they were kind of just chilling out there during those years. In the Reconstruction era, so past the Civil War, the city became known for its notable institutions of higher education and was given the nickname the Athens of the South. Now, we did not attend school in Nashville, but I can only imagine what a time that would have been.
You know, it felt just like Athens, Ohio.
Ohio, and and maybe more accurately, Georgia, which is where I believe University of Georgia is. I didn't really get the education vibe when we were down there. I don't know about you. But
no.
By the time we reached the first few decades of the 20th century, I think people were thinking, when is he going to get to this? This is when this happens. The city emerged as the center of country music. And of course, this is where we get the Grand Ole Opry, the Phantom of the... No, that's not it. Dolly, of course, and Johnny Cash.
Excuse me? The Phantom of the Opera?
Of the Opry. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. No, you can just... Oh, you can.
So
you
Dolly's can in
redact
Nashville.
That. Dolly, Johnny, and of course, I'm missing literally every single big country music person that has ever happened to be of significance in history. I just know those two people, and I'm very sorry to literally the thousands of people I missed. So to bring us into the present day, and this is where I end my history of Nashville, in 2004, a young talented folk singer on the brink of stardom relocated to Nashville to pursue a career in country music. And that folk singer's name, say it with me, Taylor Swift. And there you have it, a brief history of Nashville, and we've come full circle.
You know, that city was serving Taylor Swift realness. I was living for it. We actually stopped right outside the Taylor Swift Education Center.
Yes, she has like her own little school for music, and I was digging it. We took a picture out in front of it.
We did.
And of course, when we went, we also walked by. I was across the street from that country music Hall of Fame, which is just maybe the size of like an NFL stadium. Like, it was massive.
Oh, that place was absolutely huge.
Yes. So I'd say in all, I think if we could describe what we did in Nashville, I would say that, you know, I think the one word I would have used would be walk. We walked a lot of Nashville.
We did walk a lot of Nashville. In fact, I was feeling pretty faint by the end of that.
I was feeling faint. I don't know if it was because of just the walking, but also I think of our lunch, which I think we'll get to in Nashville. So I think we walked a good ways from our car. We parked in the downtown center. We were right by the Capitol building, if you remember. And I think we walked a good number, at least a couple miles each way, just to see what was going on. Nothing was really going on, if I remember correctly.
Actually, they had already had live performers playing on that main street by the stadium where your beloved Ravens lost in the playoffs.
Uh-huh. And
and I'm going to bring that up at every opportunity possible. That
well, they just embarrass themselves. You know, it's only just more salt to the, you know, to the wound.
Yeah.
But
didn't they also embarrass themselves the other night against the Chiefs?
Oh, that's what I was mentioning. They just embarrassed themselves on a national stage. So,
but I thought you were talking about the embarrassment they suffered when they lost to the Tennessee Titans in the stadium.
Well, yes. Well, it was in Baltimore, mind you, which is kind of worse now that I think about it.
Oh, okay.
But yes, we walked down, and you know what was the name of that road? It was the big road, the one with all the bars
I'm going to call it Nashville Street.
Nashville Avenue. Song Road. And yes. And
keep
yes.
Going.
And yes, so we walked down. We walked down to that. You know, it's not, it, you know, maybe we could post. I took a couple pictures, and in when we post that picture, we will use the name of the street so we can specify it for you if you want to see it. All the performance centers. We kept walking because the eventual.
Well, let me just pause you there because those photos will be posted on our Twitter at @RoadBoysPodcast and on our Instagram at @RoadBoysPodcast. Got to do a little promotion here, Jeremy. Come on.
Okay, Road Boys Podcast, and for all time. That's our name. Anyway. What I would say is that once we got past that street, I think we were really hungry. We wanted to eat lunch. And what I had been researching even prior to getting there is that Nashville is known for its cuisine, among other things. And one of its big dishes is hot chicken. And
oh, boy.
Yeah. And the thing with hot chicken is that they don't lie. The name is Hot Chicken, and it's no lie. They aren't mincing words when they describe these things down there.
I got the mild, and I was crying.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, and I got the medium, I think. And they asked me, "Is it okay if it's like, you know, peppered with a little bit of jalapeno seasoning?" I'm like, "Jalapeno? I eat jars of those every day." And I'm like, no problem.
You eat a lot of jalapenos.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I was like, I'm cool with it. Just give it to me. And I'll give you the name of that place. We ate at Hattie B's Hot Chicken. And it was in this interesting little center. We ate outside, an outdoor seating place. And it made both of us cry.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't finish it, which was kind of unfortunate and a little shitty because I was pretty hungry.
Yeah. And I think we saved the rest. We brought some back to Sledge.
You know what I was doing? I was eating pirate booty in the car.
That's right. We kept on driving, and it would be a while until we'd get to eat again. So that's unfortunate. But, you know, hot chicken, not for the faint of heart. And then I think we put our masks back on, and I think this is the same for you as it was for me. My face felt like it was being singed. My small little like follicles of a facial hair, which I neglected to shave, were burning off. And it felt like.
Yes. The heat did not stop with the food, you know?
Yes. And it took us a while to recover. And, you know, prayers up and thank you for the support.
Yeah, and then we just walked back up and left.
Yeah, we left Nashville. I think we saw what we wanted to see for people that don't, you know, really care too much about country music. I'm so sorry to anyone listening that loves country music. We just got to respect that.
It was a historic place to be. But at the end of the day, I didn't think there was too much going on there.
Yeah, and you know, I do think that maybe if it was a different time, if we went on a different place, maybe the vibe would be a little bit more exciting. I mean, it was a steamy, warm day in the middle of summer, middle of pandemic, nothing going on. I mean, Master of None had an episode in Nashville, and if anyone watched that episode, it made it look delightful. I wanted to go
it
down
there.
It
looked a lot better than it actually looked.
Well, I think they put like a yellow filter on that episode. It made everything look more vibrant and just more nicer than it was in reality.
Yeah, Hollywood at it again.
Movie magic. But yeah, so we got in the car and we did our fantastic, the opposite of that, terrible drive through part of Kentucky and southern Illinois.
Oh my God. I just felt Mitch McConnell's stupid flabby neck flopping around as we drove through that awful strip of Kentucky.
It was like the little, like, you know, it was like the little like nub of I guess maybe
of Mitch McConnell's neck.
Of Mitch's neck that we drove through to get to
Moscow Mitch.
Of of Kentucky that we drove through to get to Illinois, and, you know, of course, drive through Illinois to get to St. Louis. And we had stuff to listen to get us through it. I wouldn't recommend. I mean, there's nothing to stop for there. You can just gas up your car, drive through.
And you know what was so horrible was that we were making so much progress until they decided to do construction and narrow the highway down to one lane for approximately 50 miles.
Mm-hmm. That was a little bit preposterous. I was like, we're about to get out of Kentucky. Don't you worry. And then that happened, and we were in Kentucky.
And then an hour later, we were in Kentucky.
Now, I don't want to blast Kentucky. I'm sure there are fine people in Kentucky. If we get listeners in Kentucky, please write us. Tell us where to visit in Kentucky, and we probably won't go, but, you know, we appreciate you. And
we appreciate you, but yeah, we're not going back.
And I would say the same for Southern Illinois. Not much to see there.
Southern Illinois was a wasteland, but the important part about it is that it brought us to St. Louis.
That's right. So St. Louis, it comes at you, and it's a good segue into the history of St. Louis, because it really does come at you. It felt like, you know, you're seeing nothing, and then it just pops right out on the horizon, I feel like. Civilization.
It was John Cena from out of nowhere, mm-hmm. from the top rope realness.
Well, of course, the drive going in, it's like fields, 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 and then you're hit with your first Walmart, you get a Target, and then like a Texas Roadhouse, and then I think like you get the Gateway Arch, and then you see everything.
Well, they get St. Louis bread first, too.
St. Louis bread, which is interesting. We'll get into that whole segment, St. Louis bread. But why is St. Louis there? And what happened to make it such a big place in reality?
Well, why don't you tell us?
I'll tell you why. Hundreds of years ago, the land that is now St. Louis was inhabited by people of the Mississippian culture. Now, you're probably asking yourself, what are the people of Mississippian culture? Are you?
I don't want to get into that, because that's just going to get offensive real quick.
It's not what you would think as the modern day version of the phrase. It actually refers to Native American tribes, and it's just a little bit more ambiguous as to who they were in reality. So what nations were there? It's a bit more ambiguous. So the phrase Mississippian culture is used. It refers to Native Americans that used to inhabit the land. Surprise. All right. Surprise. And so if you couldn't tell by St. Louis, the name of the city, maybe it's not too obvious, but this is another French settled city.
Saint-Louis.
Mm-hmm. Saint-Louis. And in 1764, I think you should be reading this part, because I'm going to screw up with the names. So Pierre Laclaude Leguest. Oh, God. I think Leguist. It's
no. And this is one of those ones that you're just gonna have to power through. So okay. Go for it.
So this guy and his 13-year-old scout Auguste Chouteau, I might have come close there.
Chouteau,
who were the recipients of a land grant from the King of France at the time, decided that the area of land that is now St. Louis would be great as a fur trading post. So there's some similarities between this and Nashville. So when settlers built a village around this post, it was decided that the village would be named after Louis IX of France. So interestingly, not a Louis that was, you know, living any time close to when they were living. I think the
1200s. Nah, he's an old fuck.
He's an old one. So the region shifted ownership to France, to Spain, and then to France once again, up until 1803, which is a big year. Big, big year. You know what happened?
1803?
Mm-hmm.
The Louisiana Purchase.
Louisiana Purchase. That's
right.
You're
going to ask a history major what's significant about 1803. I'm coming at you with Louisiana Purchase. I'm coming at you with Thomas Jefferson. Mm-hmm. I'm coming at you with some embargo lead up realness. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I'm coming to you with.
It was all news to me. Anyway, in the early. Just kidding. I took AP US history.
It's what I'm bringing to the table.
So the Louisiana Purchase. So in so you know, now we are American. It's an American city, and I saw interestingly a little piece of trivia on the day that St. Louis came under American control. There were three flags flying in the city. Like people just apparently had no clue what was going on. There was a Spanish, French, and American flag all flying at once on that day in 1803.
That's like United Nations realness going on.
I know. So I'm glad they got their facts straight. It's American now. So in the early 1800s, St. Louis's population exploded as New Englanders and East Coasters settled in, perhaps settled for St. Louis on their journeys west.
I guess they did settle for it.
And then during the 1800s, the city's expansion was propagated by the arrival of German and Irish immigrants. So the population is booming. And then now in the mid-1800s, in 1849, I'll give you some tea, there was a big fire in the city. It burned down 430 buildings, along with 23 steamboats sitting out there on that Mississippi River. So,
I remember hearing about that when
yes.
It must have been in the Gateway Arch Museum that we were in.
Yes. There was certainly like a placard about that. Big fire.
Jesus, there's a fire.
That's right. There was a big fire, but of course that didn't stop them. They rebuilt. And so the city kept booming. During the Civil War, the city again stayed widely under Union control, continuing literally a theme of every stop we visited thus far. Union control. What did the Confederacy have, really, in the end? Every place was Union controlled.
That's true. I can't even dispute that.
Right. So by the time we reach the 20th century, St. Louis is a bustling manufacturing city with a booming population. And in fact, this is kind of stupid because you remember how much space there was around this place.
It would already sound stupid.
Yes. You know, there's a lot of space. So what I'm about to say is pretty stupid. In fact, people are beginning to realize that during this time in like the late 19th century or early 20th century, that the city is running out of space, if you can believe that, because in 1876, voters approved a home rule charter, which is a very basic term, and I had to look this up. It basically means that a city can approves itself to create its own laws and ordinances. It's the first city to do so in America, but now every city, I think, has that. So it's just but in doing so, they established static city boundaries. So if you want to be living in St. Louis, you got set boundaries that were defined in 1800s.
I guess those were small. I'm not really getting that.
Yeah, they made it small. They made it small. The city was too. That means that the city couldn't legally expand. So, like, if you wanted to be living in St. Louis and have the benefits of living in the city proper, you can't. You know, they couldn't expand.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, it's stupid. Look at those so many fields. I mean, come on, that's just dumb. That just wasn't that, no foresight there.
I mean, what are we doing here?
This
is just the way to go.
Exactly. Just don't set your city boundaries. Say eventually we can just take over the whole fields and, you know, be done with it. But they didn't do that. So naturally, in 1904, the city would host two events that would make it even more popular for people to move there and just on the world stage. And what were those two events? They were the World's Fair and, in the same year, the 1904 Olympic Games. So there's your Judy.
The Olympics in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. And along with the World's Fair, and of course, that's where you get your Judy Garland, Meet Me in St. Louis fantasy, of course. That fantasy, people were living it. And if St. Louisians, I don't know if that's, I wrote that down, I couldn't find how to actually identify these people correctly. I just think that sounds right. St. Louisians.
St. Louisians, I'd say.
Yeah. Wanted to stop expansion. Hosting these two events certainly did not do the trick, because by 1950, the population peaked at around 856,000, which caused many to start moving out to the suburbs. You know the whole deal. Big suburb expansion.
That's sort where you get all the racist white people.
Right, and that is how the city sort of is defined today, because something I noticed out of visiting there is that it's a very suburban city, and you don't have to go too far from the city center to really feel like you are in the suburbs. And I think that's where we mainly, except for the morning after we got there, you know, kind of experienced were those St. Louis suburbs. So... In total, the city is a manufacturing city, center of beer, of course. Anheuser-Busch is there, chemicals, military equipment, metal, and of course, it's on a river, as all cities are. So just bringing it to present, that's what the city is today.
All right, cool. Mm-hmm.
So, how did you think?
I particularly like the part where we got to the end of it.
Mm-hmm. That, it's a cool little history, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of St. Louis when we went?
You know, I feel like I'm a little biased towards St. Louis because of some experiences that we had there.
It was a fun
rather
time.
Than the actual characteristics of the city.
Well, yes, I'll let you go into the experiences.
Well, what I will say is I quite enjoyed driving on the iconic Route 66.
That's right. It's there.
It exists in St. Louis. It doesn't look like Route 66, but it exists.
And, I know, it's odd.
And I did like that I had a little online dispute about the pizza in St. Louis because one of those stupid Cardinals players or something tweeted that like best pizza in the world is in St. Louis. and then we got pizza from St. Louis. And being from New Jersey, let me just say, it's a joke.
It was, you know, it was functional as pizza.
No, I would have to disagree with you. I couldn't even qualify that as pizza.
Not pizza. Well, I'll just describe what we had, what we ate. It was like a square thing. The slices were square and it was thin crust. And they called it St. Louis pizza.
Yeah. It wasn't pizza. But regardless, we also went to the famed Ted Drew's.
Yes. Oh, man. I know what you're going to talk about.
Oh, you know what I'm going to talk about. We went to Ted Drew's Custard, which is some custard place that Jeremy had seen on the Food Network.
It's a famous place.
Yeah, he'd seen on the Food Network. Like Guy Fieri's only visited 6,000 places. But we did go there, and they have this custard that's supposed to stay in the cup if you flip it, like some Dairy Queen realness.
Yeah, they call them concretes. So, like, what's that supposed to mean? They're concretes.
Absolutely.
It's not going to move. It's just stuck in there, you know?
Well,
that's what I was told.
You put it to the test in front of a large studio audience. And
a lot of people.
Yes, lots of people in line. You turned it over, tried to take a picture, and as you took the picture, this was like slow motion, the ice cream, custard, whatever, just completely fell out of the cup and splattered all over the actual concrete.
Maybe that's why they call it concrete. Ka-ching. Goddamn.
And then there was just like a silence from the crowd, and then everyone was like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
This idiot. I did, you know, I'm not going to, I can't, this is one of the things that, you know, multiple people saw, not only Jacob, we have pictures of it. I can't dispute that happened. And it did. And I'd like to thank the kind people at Ted Drew's because one of the line movers, one of the guys who was just shuttling people off to different desks to order, saw, and he was like, we can get you a new one, man. And I was like, thank you. And I cut in, and I don't know if they wanted me to pay again. I just took that custard. I don't think I needed to pay again, but I'll just say I was just taking that second custard. And thank you,
and
Ted Drew's.
And not flipping it upside down.
Yeah, you see... I think it was good for a little bit. I had it upside down the original time, and it was good for maybe a few seconds. And the thing was, I wanted to get the neon sign behind it, like a basic bitch
in the photo. Yeah, mm-hmm. You were doing your basic bitch realness fantasy,
and I think I was just about to take it, and I just felt all the weight shift in that cup, and I knew immediately before it even hit the ground that I was in trouble.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. I will say that the highlight of St. Louis was Gateway Arch National yes. Park, which was shocking that it was a national park, first of all. Mm-hmm. But second of all, was a pleasant surprise because it had the Dred Scott Decision Courthouse in the park.
Oh, what fun history. But yes, that's true. The Dred Scott Courthouse is right there. I think that, you know, we didn't get into this last episode. We started taking our iconic pictures in front of park signs. That started in Smoky Mountain. I think we already posted one to our Road Boys podcast, Twitter, and Instagram, so you can check it out there. We shake hands in front of every single one of these park signs.
Yeah.
I think that potentially... and excuse the lawnmower that is currently blowing right outside my window, that the that potentially the one that we took at Gateway Arch is one of our more athletic ones, one of our more impressive that we caught it ones.
It was a feat.
Yes. And we got it centered, and, you know, we didn't want to ask anyone with their germs and they're in without a mask to take our picture. Like, we didn't want to
with
do that.
With their coronavirus.
With their virus. And we just took it upon ourselves there to take our pictures at the Gateway Arch. And we'll post them. You'll see them on our Twitter and Instagram.
They'll be up. But the arch was pretty big. We did not go up it. It was closed because of coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
But... nonetheless impressive, and I got a really spectacular photo of it that I'm looking forward to putting up on our social media.
Yeah, beautiful, right by the river. If you're going to do it, you know, you can maybe have an even more full experience because maybe things have gotten a bit better. Maybe you'll be going when things have gotten a bit better and you can go up it. I would just say we had...
Was that your phone?
It was, I think, my computer, which makes no sense. E-news, baby.
Unbelievable. The level of unprofessionalism, far too much.
And this is the notification I was waiting for. Jennifer Lopez to receive People's Icon Award at 2020 each People's Choice Awards. And that was what I was waiting for. So thank God.
Thank God it had the audacity to interrupt our recording session.
It came through. But yeah, back to St. Louis and the Gateway Arch. You got to find parking in the city center. You can't go up to the river. We made that mistake by accident. We drove.
Oh yeah, we did.
You got to find parking in a parking garage. There's plenty by there. And then go in. There's a nice museum on the bottom level of the Gateway Arch that we did check out. And use the restroom there, which is very nice and handy.
Thanks for letting everyone know that we use the restroom.
Well, if you need it, you know, you're out there in the city center. Who knows where there's a restroom? And that's where there is one.
Yeah. And I was kind of shocked that we purchased a National Parks pass because we knew we were going to be going to a lot. That didn't even count. We had to, like, register separately on their own little system.
Yeah. Like, they want to shuttle people in quickly and not have lines. That's not how you do it. We had to, like, register online. We had to make an account. Worth it, I guess, by the way, but, you know, we had to like register for tickets there. So it does not work the same way as just visiting a regular national park would, you know, cause the pass is perfect. We love the pass and I wish we could have used it there.
I love the pass. I've always loved the pass.
Everyone
There's
loves the pass.
There's nothing I love more than the pass.
I mean, we'll get into that in our later stops, but, you know, if you're going to be doing multiple national parks in a year, gotta get the pass. Just say
you gotta have the pass.
So
well, that was a good summary of our St. Louis and Nashville stuff.
Yeah, and then we moved westward, and that'll be for another time very soon, our next episode. So St. Louis, such a nice place. How could there have been anything bad that happened in St. Louis ever? I think you probably were asking yourself this question.
Well, I'm sure you're going to give us an answer in our next segment, Dark History.
That's right, Dark History. Believe it or not, something bad happened there. And last week, you gave us a nice double murder. And I know the boundaries of Dark History stories. And I think there will be a lot of times where we do talk about true crime and violence. But I want to get a little bit into the paranormal and maybe some ghosts, maybe some spooky stuff that has gone on there.
Jeremy and Jacob Studios presents Paranormal Activity 12.
St. Louis. That's right. So much of what I will be talking to you about today, Jacob, is widely debated in regard to accuracy. There's debates over where this took place in St. Louis, but you know, and whether or not this even happened in the manner close to how people widely think it did. But this is a story that has seeped far into our popular culture, and not many probably know this happened in St. Louis in actuality. So what I can say for sure is that this all took place in and around St. Louis, and evidence does suggest that a house in St. Louis's quiet Bell Nor neighborhood lays at the center of it all. So we're going to be talking about those crazy suburbs we saw. So to begin, we start our story in Cottage City, Maryland. Yes, Maryland, where an unidentified...
How are you possibly going to bring Maryland into this discussion about St. Louis? You have some audacity.
Well, it's going to be really cool and unique how we bring this story to St. Louis. I'll just say that, so get ready to have your mind blown.
Okay.
So Cottage City, Maryland, is where an unidentified family became concerned of strange occurrences happening in their son's bedroom. So what's going on in their son's bedroom? We don't know. The identity of the son still remains anonymous to this day, but all accounts of what happens refer to this 13-year-old boy as Ronald or Ronnie. I like Ronnie, so I'll just say Ronnie.
What were you doing in your bedroom, Ronnie?
Yeah, we heard some strange stuff coming from your room, son. Like, I don't know. He probably would.
I guarantee you that's 100% what was happening in that bedroom.
So, you know, Ronald's family became very concerned when they started hearing strange noises emanating from the walls and beneath the house's floorboards. So this isn't just his bedroom. Now it's coming out from everywhere in the house. So maybe their suspicions are piqued for some weird stuff that's happening. Eventually, though, the only person who could hear these noises was Ronnie, who continued to claim he could hear the sound of squeaking shoes as he lay in bed at night.
Ooh.
So, yeah, so what's going
Sounds
on?
Sounds like maybe someone was busy in the other room getting some squeaking going.
Some squeaky shit. Anyway, so yeah, so now Ronnie's favorite aunt in this story is an important player because she introduced Ronnie to the Ouija board during one of her visits from none other than St. Louis. That's right, St. Louis. There we go.
Wow.
Here we go. And I promise you.
Is that the only tie-in to St. Louis?
No. I promise you this story will take place in St. Louis eventually. So it was through Ronnie's use of the Ouija board that Ronnie's family believed he would later become possessed. Yes.
All right.
The account of what happened doesn't exactly say what happened to Ronnie's aunt, but for a time, the family believed the aunt, who I guess is now deceased, was the one who haunted their Maryland residence and specifically liked to mess around with Ronnie. Like, what's going on with this aunt? Anyway, days passed.
Someone would possess me.
It would just be such a time, I feel like, you know, like, would you come out of it and be like, I don't know where, like, what happened? Like, it's a coma. I have no clue how these things work. But they think Ronnie may be possessed, but now things are about to take a turn for the worse. An account offered by the Riverfront Times, which I found a lot of this info from, so thank you, Riverfront Times, states that Ronnie's bed shook wildly throughout the night. Bibles and holy relics flew through the air. Claw-like scratches raked the child as he slept. And when the word Lewis rose up on Ronnie's ribs, like a scratch, like you could see the word Lewis on his ribs. The family decided to visit their relatives in St. Louis, and that might be a cure to whatever was ailing him. So there you go.
Well, that sounds pretty serious.
Yes. So imagine you wake up, you see something scratched in on you. It says Lewis. And you're like, well, I guess we got to go to St. Louis.
I don't know. It's like sort of flying through the air.
Mm-hmm. And on the scratches, Bibles, you know, books flying. Anyway,
it's suspicious.
So, and I think you'll be happy to know now we are in St. Louis. So there we are. And Ronnie isn't getting any better. The diagnosis is in.
Damn it, Ronnie.
I know. Come on. Visiting St. Louis didn't do anything. Jesus. So the diagnosis is in. Ronnie is possessed, and the clergymen have been called. So now
who
it's serious.
Who diagnosed this? What diagnosis?
Well, I thought, you know, I'm spinning my magic. I think they I don't know that you want to hear the exact words that these priests say when they come and visit him. The diagnosis
probably something
is in.
Homophobic.
Yeah, it's probably the diagnosis is in is the term I wanted to use. So it's in. He's possessed. And then from March 11th to April 18th, so yes, this happened over a month, almost the amount of time we were on our road trip, so just to give you reference of like how long this would have been going on, a group of bishops and fathers and priests, what have you, laid siege to the demon that was purportedly possessing Ronnie. So, obviously, I'm not going to go into each day at length, but here are some of the highlights of an account that I found of what was going on. So, here's March 16th. The boy was dozing when the bottle of St. Ignatius holy water was thrown from a table 2 feet from ours, so Ronnie's, bed into a nearby corner, a distance of approximately 6 feet. 5 minutes later, a bookcase was moved from alongside the bed and turned completely around, facing the entrance of the room. So, stuff is floating. Stuff is levitating. Things are
levitation.
Flying. Things are flying. And then, I'll give you one more day as a sample. The high point of the, this is March 20th. The high point of the evening were urinations, which really burned R, breaking wind through rectum three different times, and cursing the exorcists. Some of the vulgarity follows. Go to hell, you dirty sons of bitches, you dirty assholes.
So they were farting and pissing?
Well, the boy was. Ronnie was. This is all what Ronnie, what they're doing.
Does that constitute a possession?
Well, I mean,
I've been possessed.
Yes. I mean, you got the burning urination, you got cursing, and you got farting. And, you know, that's telltale signs, I'd say.
Telltale.
So this is the last day, though. So this is April 18th. What happened on April 18th? This is a day after Easter. Ronnie awoke in a bad state. Now he's not in his family's house anymore. He's been taken to a psych ward. So you're waking up and you're in a hospital now. You're in a wing of a hospital. He was having seizures. He was sickly. The demon was apparently talking through him. Yeah, so stuff isn't looking good. But at 10:45 in the morning, the priests in attendance made one last push to exorcise the demon, which still had a grip on Ronnie. 7 minutes after the priest commanded the demon to leave, Ronnie, the boy awoke after having passed out for about, you know, as I mentioned, 7 minutes and said, "He's gone." And that was that. Ronnie went on to live a pretty good life.
And they just called it a day.
And yes, and the interesting thing is that he's apparently still alive. And he went on to have a pretty good life. Pretty good life. Yeah, this happened in 1949, if I did not mention that. He's still alive.
Can we get
alive.
Him on the show? We I want to interview him.
I mean, he's anonymous, but, you know, we could find him. He's somewhere on the East Coast, apparently, so that narrows it down a bit.
His name is Ronnie. I know like 12.
I know 12 too. Maybe he goes, he's an older man. Maybe he goes by Ronald. So that's, so put in the white pages,
wait,
Ronald.
Conspiracy. I think it's Ronald McDonald.
Okay, that would make complete sense. Oh my God. Okay. Well, we just uncovered something pretty serious. Anyway.
McDonald's, like FBI officials are coming to our houses right now.
Right. Could you imagine, though, after an hour I mean, after literally a month of this and then having this whole, like, inner demon battle with, like, holy relics and people, you know, singeing things onto your, like, you know, the cross with this, it singes you and you're going through this terrible, you know, pain that you just wake up and just be like, he's gone. Like, it's done. Oh, yeah,
it sounds awful.
It sounds awful, but also it just sounds, you know, he could have said something a bit more eloquent, like, you know, thank God I'm alive. I've made it through the gates. Like, you know, something like that. He just said he's gone.
Yeah, well, after that burning pissing, I mean.
Yeah. But, you know, everything went back to normal. And, you know, this is a widely discussed case of demonic possession, you know, in the communities that talk about this. This is a very famous case. And why is it famous? Besides from all the stuff I just described, you might be understanding where I'm going now. If you haven't seen it coming, in 1971, American horror novelist William Peter Blatty found himself inspired to write a cute little story about this case of demonic possession after learning about it as a student at Georgetown University. What's the name of the book that he wrote? That's right, it's The Exorcist. And shortly after the release of the book, Blatty teamed up with director William Friedkin to produce a movie, which would release only two short years later in 1973 under that same name, The Exorcist.
Not a movie I was a fan of.
I know. And actually, it's interesting because you were just talking to me about it, and I didn't want to say anything.
I didn't
give anything away.
Yeah, how could you do this to me? We literally just had a discussion about this yesterday, this movie, and you didn't bring up this history at all.
Well, yeah, because I'm trying to surprise you. I'm trying to surprise everyone.
Oh, all right. Well,
yeah. And there you have it. The story that inspired The Exorcist happened in St. Louis and Maryland.
St. Louis. I felt the energy in St. Louis of some type of exorcist realness going on. It definitely felt a little creepy. Like, I definitely wish I had a ghost box on hand so that we could maybe track down some of that paranormal activity. Because
It certainly felt a little bit old.
It felt old, but it felt creepy.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean,
why are you agreeing with me? I know you disagree.
I could see that.
I can see it in your face.
Okay, man. So the whole place is just a suburb.
Yes, but I find suburbs creepy because it's where scary straight white men live.
All right. Yeah, I could see that now. I mean, I just thought it was like we could have been anywhere in the United States. And if that's saying something, then everywhere's creepy, I guess.
Well, a lot of places are creepy, and we definitely visited a lot of creepy places.
There are certainly a lot of creepy places, and I'd say it was more of being out in civilization that we felt creeped out than it was sort of like when we were out doing our fun outdoor adventures, because that's all vibrant and life and lively.
I'd say like the very middle of the country was very scary.
Oh, and yes, and that's a great way to say that, you know, preview the next episode. That's where we're headed.
Yeah, we're headed right into the center of everything. And let me just say, it's creepy.
It's creepy. It's a lot of stuff. You could, you know, oceans of nothing. And that's the gateway of the West, St. Louis. So once you hit St. Louis, you'll be driving through it. You'll be driving through that nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that actually brings us to our fan question of
yes,
the week.
Sir.
Mm-hmm. That everyone has been so generously submitting in our DMs. Mm-hmm. Tons and tons of questions flooded in this week, Jeremy.
Oh, really?
Okay,
oh,
well, yeah.
This is
we had hundreds. Hundreds.
Oh, my goodness.
Dare I say thousands?
Thousands? Well, that would make sense. We're on the world stage. We're coast to coast. And that's by that comparison, we're worldly.
Absolutely. So let's get into this week's fan question. This one was from BussyLover443.
Mm-hmm.
And the question for us is, what is time? And can you explain the concept?
Hmm.
That's a good question.
It's a good one. I think it's pretty easy. We can give
it
a shot.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too difficult to tackle.
No. Well, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
My thoughts? No one's ever asked me for my thoughts before. I would say that concept of time is a flat circle.
Okay, Rust.
It is something that exists, and it is something that is real.
Ah, okay. I think that's a pretty, you know, it's an answer.
it's an answer, yeah.
Okay, I like to think about this a little bit. So, you know, if there is anything that I would love to experience in my lifetime, and I don't think this is something that we ever will, and maybe we ever as a human race will experience, it will be time travel. I love the concept of time travel. And I don't know if it's possible. Theoretically, I've seen equations say that it's possible, but... You know,
Neil deGrasse Tyson said it's possible.
It's possible. And the best comparison I can find to their, you know, just like an analogy someone has given, and I don't know the name of the person who said this, but some genius, some mathematician, scientist has said that you can think of time as a river. You may have heard this before. I think it's pretty famous.
Yeah, it was Amanda Bynes.
Dr. Amanda Bynes. She said that time is a river. And basically, theoretically, if we knew how to do this, we could get on and off of it at any time we so damn pleased. In which case, we could just walk along the coastline and jump back in at a certain point. Anyway, further up the river, back before the river, before it even began. Who knows?
Oh, I just heard it has to do with speed. The speed you're traveling.
Well, I like to think about, if that's the case, and I like to think about the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeves, where he goes back up and he tries to...
Skinny legend.
Yeah, he flies and flies around the world until he, like, flies around so fast that he reverses time. Now, if that's possible, someone should give it a try.
It's not.
Okay. I mean, you would have thought by then they would have known how to do this stuff, but I guess not.
Yeah, what year was that? Like
1970, even, I think, 1970.
Wow, you really knew that off the top of your head. I'm a little impressed.
Well, I think it's just that, you know, I just comb through the Wikipedia archives. You know, I'm trying to memorize stuff.
All right. Well, that, I mean, I guess that's what you have to do. I hated every second of that. And I'd say that was a pretty good answer to the fan question of the week.
Yes. So thank you to BussyLover443. We appreciate the question.
Yes, absolutely. And make sure you keep sending those questions. Our DMs are open on Twitter and Instagram at Road Boys Podcast.
Yes. Road Boys Podcast Twitter, Road Boys Podcast Instagram. Oh, and some exciting news. We have, you know, however you're accessing this, that's fantastic. Thank you for listening. We are on basically all of the major providers, I think, now. Maybe
we're on everything.
We're on everything. We have amazing compatibility. So
we really show the judges versatility. Well, this has gone on long enough. I did enjoy our histories of Nashville and St. Louis. I did like that the Exorcist stuff we got into.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say, like, in conclusion on my end, that these were interesting stops to make. One regret I have is that we didn't get to make it to Memphis, but it was very far out of the way.
It's so far out of the way. It's, like, in the corner, like, southwest of Tennessee. You can – someone fact check me there, but –
It definitely is.
Yeah. That's for another time.
Yeah, but I will say that it was worthwhile to actually stop in these places. There are some fun things to do. And especially when you're driving east to west, you know, what's the point of driving out there if you don't make all the fun stops along the way?
That's certainly right. So no regrets in any of this.
All right. Well, that's that.
That's that, I guess. We'll be back very soon with a new installment.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Should I preview it? We're going to have a very special Tuesday release of the next episode. You're going to get two episodes in 1 week.
Some would say that's too much, Jeremy and Jacob, and I just say it's the right amount. Is that right?
It's a special treat. What more could you want? Besides, you know, maybe happiness, self-fulfillment, you know, and land, property, land, a job.
I mean, at the end of the day, none of that matters.
None of that matters. And what does matter is this podcast.
Are we delivering content? Yes. Okay. Debate settled.
The debate is over. All right. Thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you, everybody. And we'll get back to you soon.
Yeah. Goodbye. Talk to you later. Goodbye.
Talk to you later. Goodbye.
Road Boys, starring Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro as themselves. Produced by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. Directed by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. And created by Jacob Velotti and Jeremy Shapiro. Special thanks to Vlad Glashenko for recording the intro and outro music royalty-free. And Tina Perkins, that's me, for recording promotional content. To learn more, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Road Boys Podcast.